Hello and welcome to Time with Pastor Otabo, our interactive discussion program that throws the light of scripture on the biggest issues of our lives. My name is Albert Okran, welcoming you on behalf of Dr. and Mrs. Otabo. Last week, we brought our enthralling discussion about the African church to a close, and we recommend that you get the entire series on YouTube or at Mensa Otabo on Facebook. Today, we ask a few questions about the ministry of the pastor. And helping us with the discussion today, it's my honor to welcome Pastor Mensa Otabo. Doc, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
We've had a really wonderful journey on the African church, and today we are looking at the ministry of the pastor. What should we expect?
We'll see.
We trust God to learn. All
we'll
of us are pastors, so we are very eager to learn.
Yes.
Let me welcome my colleagues, Pastor Eric Hermeku, ICGC Open Heavens. Pastor Eric, good to see you.
Thank you very much, Reverend Albert.
And Pastor Priscilla Nana Nketiah of ICGC Eagles Temple. Pastor Priscilla.
Thank you so much.
We're ready to learn.
Ready to learn.
Absolutely. Doc, last week you rounded up the discussion with a very strong point about burnout and the need for reinvention. And we'll focus a bit on that in talking about the pastor. But let's start by giving context. Ephesians 4:11 talks about the fivefold ministry. But help us understand the ministry and the calling or the office of the pastor.
The office of the pastor, I mean, if you look at the descriptions God gave for his leaders, he called them shepherds in the Old Testament. So even the king was called a shepherd of the people. The prophet was a shepherd of the people. The priest was a shepherd of the people. So it would seem as if no matter what a person's spiritual calling, gifting, ability was, God sees them as the shepherds of his people. So I like to see the ministry of the pastor as a generic ministry, as embracing that of all Christian leadership, because it is a shepherding of God's flock. So much as I know that there are distinctive callings that God gives to people, I try to see all of it within the context of shepherding God's people. And that's why I think that a pastor's ministry cuts across whatever ministry anybody is supposed to have. They should have a care for God's people. They should be interested in their well-being. They should know how to feed the flock. They should know how to nurture the flock. Jesus Christ gave the commission to Peter after his resurrection. When he asked him three times, do you love me? And he said, feed my flock, tend my lambs, tend my sheep. So you just see that even within that context, the whole idea of tending, feeding, nurturing the flock of God is at the center of every ministry. And that's why I see the pastoral ministry as a center ministry.
So, Doc, it would mean that if even somebody had a gifting, a prophetic gifting, or a teaching orientation, or an evangelistic calling, the name pastor can be generically used for all of them, and it wouldn't be out of place.
Yes, because they are all shepherds of God's people. I mean, Ephesians 4 says that for the perfecting of the saints. So that's what the ministries are there for, to shepherd God's people, to feed God's people, to encourage God's people, and to nurture God's people. And I like to think of everything then within the context of a pastor. Just like in the early church, they saw everything, they designated people as elders, even though they had different ministries, they called them elders. But the eldership is a shepherding ministry. It's a pastoral ministry.
That answers the question of those who have been asking, so then where are the remaining four in the church? I think this one answers it.
Yes, I mean, you can be an evangelist and still shepherding God's people. You can be a prophet, you know, and a teacher and still shepherding God's people. The core function of any person Christ calls is to shepherd his flock.
Thank you.
And shepherding God's people is such a huge responsibility. We've heard you consistently say that every pastor, and by extension, everyone, should, after a few years, 5-7 years, reinvent themselves or risk losing relevance. What does it entail to reinvent yourself or reinvention? And why is it so important to the pastor?
Well, I mean, those who wait on the Lord, the scripture says, shall renew their strength. So the idea of renewal is right there in the scriptures. Jesus Christ, although he ministered for 3 years, went through various renewals. When he would go to pray, of course, he started his ministry with 40 days of prayer and fasting. If you look at all the major leaders of the Bible, there are moments of renewal, either by spiritual encounter, by a vision God gives to them, by a new direction he gives to them, by an encouragement he gives to them that encourages them. So if, for example, Abraham is going through the crisis of determining what he must be doing with his life because he doesn't have a child and he has this promise on him, God had to visit him to bring renewal to him and help him to refocus at every time from Hagar back to Sarah. And all of that is God helping him to adjust better to the work that he's doing. So when I talk about reinvention, that's what it means. It means that you allow the Holy Spirit to bring a renewal. And because the context we minister in changes, people change. So you can't do the same thing with the people. So for example, when I started pastoring, most members of my church were teenagers. They were in secondary schools, some were in training colleges, some were in universities, but, you know, teenagers, early 20s. Very rarely would you find people who were married. So my ministry then would be to people who are very young, enthusiastic, and trying to find their feet in life. But 10 years down the line, these same people who are teenagers are now married and their aspirations have changed. So if I cannot change the way I relate the message to them, I will lose them. Although I nurtured them, I would lose them. So a shepherd grows with his sheep, with a flock, and with the world the flock lives in. The changes in the society requires a recalibration of the pastor. And all of that is part of reinventing yourself.
So the pastor must come to the point where he has this self-realization that it's a time for renewal, a time for change.
Yes,
yes. Else you keep going.
Our world changes. Within every 5 years, things have changed. I mean, so many things change. Your people are changing. Now, a lot of my church members are in their 50s and 60s and 70s. Their needs are very different from when they were in their 30s. And I had to preach a different message to them to help them. And the thing with the church is, while they are 70s, you also have teenagers. So all of that requires a sharper focus in how you message yourself so that you can preach a message which at once ministers to a 70-year-old and a teenager because of the skills you bring into communicating the message God has given to you.
Right. Doc, what is the consequence when a pastor ignores the warnings to reinvent himself?
They're going to have issues. And last week I talked about the hurts that pastors go through and that just disables them. And if those things are there, you know that you feel hurt, you stand before the flock and you've lost energy, then you need to do something about it. And it's good to do it on your own. And sometimes to pray, take time off to go and pray, to wait on the Lord. But it's also good for you to immerse yourself in a different environment. And that requires exposure. Going somewhere else, learning something new, immersing yourself in a new environment, that helps to shift your way of thinking and your way of doing things. It will also mean that building new relationships. If everybody around you, if you're a pastor and your pastoral circle is full of bitter pastors, everybody's angry, everybody has been disappointed. So when they meet, their topic is about how the flock are ungrateful and how people don't care and how you suffer and nobody cares for you. And if that's the circle that you flow in as a pastor, you're hurting yourself. You're hurting yourself because you are reinforcing your hurt. So you come and say, oh, I got hurt. And this one says, oh, mine is worse than yours. So then you have to remove yourself from such groupings, form new relationships that are wholesome, that look at life a little differently, not from the hurt point of view, but from a healing point of view. And it's part of the way a pastor readjusts into new environments.
What are the signs that show that a pastor is burnt out and needs to do something?
When you fight and fight and fight so many battles, even when you are winning the battles, you get weary of fighting. And interestingly, Elijah felt that when he had won a major battle on Mount Carmel. And you would think that, you know, this should be the high of his life, but it's a low point of his life because he thinks, I'm fighting alone and there is nobody else fighting with me. And then people don't even appreciate what I'm doing because Jezebel wants to get my head. And so he wants to die. One of the things that happens to pastors, sometimes after some of the greatest things that happens to a pastor, he's preached a great sermon, he's ministered well, and everybody thinks he should be happy. That becomes a very low moment because after you've emptied yourself, you just feel empty. You feel dry. So that's where Elijah was. And so he says, Lord, take my life. And God says, not yet. I will take it, but not yet. And so God directs him to a mountain. And he says, go there and wait for me. We'll have a conversation when we meet. And so he goes to the mountain and God manifests himself to him in different ways and then speaks to him and then gives him a new assignment. That's reinventing Elijah. Gives him a new assignment and says, now go and look for Elisha and go and look for Hazael and go and look for Jehu and anoint them. And so he has a new lease of life, a new purpose in life. He's no longer going to be fighting Baal's prophets and Jezebel. Now I have to go and look for somebody to train and mentor. And interestingly, he spent about 20 years after that doing that assignment. And that tells you he had a new focus, a new impetus, a new drive for his life and for his ministry. Pastors need that at various points where the drive will be challenged, the focus will be better, and a new direction comes that releases your energy and makes you feel youthful, have a drive to do something great for God.
Doc, it would then mean that if you feel burnt out, it is not a bad thing itself, as long as you can find the mountain.
Yeah, it's human. It's human. But you have to have an encounter. You have to have an encounter, and you have to have an encounter with God. And it could come through your private prayer, but it could also come by you just attending a conference somewhere, meeting somewhere, sitting down to be ministered to, hearing somebody else preach, and just something triggers something inside you. And all of a sudden, you have a new purpose in life. One of the people I admire most who could do that, two people, was Oral Roberts, who had the ability to do that, and Billy Graham, who also could do that a lot. And that's why they had so much longevity in their ministry.
What did they do?
If you look at Oral Roberts' ministry started as a pure healing ministry. I mean, he had tent meetings, and he would lay hands on people, and sometimes he would do that until he would almost drop. And then the healing revival that he was part of, which was called in America the Healing Wave, started ebbing. And almost everybody who was in that wave started going down. People were tired of it. They didn't want that again. And that's when Oral shifted and went into television. And people thought he had backslided. But he had a totally new approach to ministry, which was very different from the hands-on ministry he had. And then he did that for a while, and then he went into education. He set up a university. So if you look at his life at various points, there will always be a new appetite to do something. And that kept him going for probably about 60 or so years of ministry. You can't do the same thing for 60 years. You're going to burn out sometime.
For me, the biggest revelation in all this is the point about being most vulnerable after a big success. That's, for me, the biggest lesson in this answer.
Because every success is a peak. If you're climbing a mountain, you're very energized to climb the mountain. You do everything. I want to get to the top. I want to get to the top. Then you get to the top. Where do you go next? The next movement, you're going down to the valley. So you have to find another mountain to climb. Otherwise, right after your greatest achievement, you'll be set in huge depression. Sometimes men and women of God have fallen after their greatest successes because there's nothing else to do. Like David, there was nothing else to do. So he's on the veranda looking at women because there's nothing else to do. He has won every battle. He's defeated everybody else. You know, he had to have a new mission. And thankfully, God gave him a new mission that re-energized him to build a temple or to prepare for the temple. So he spent the rest of his energy after that preparing to build a temple. So something else must engage you when you have achieved all that you want to achieve.
Pastor, can we look at some of the signs of burnout? Because sometimes we don't recognize that we are in that process. And then it just happens to us.
Because it's simmering. It's not a conflagration of fire that burns you. It's just a slow burning dissatisfaction, unhappiness, pain, discouragement, hurts. And when you're a pastor, you hear a lot of those, you know. You preach a message you thought was the best, and then you hear comments people made about your message. And it continues and people say, oh, pastor is no longer hot, pastor is lost it, pastor is no longer that. And you hear criticisms of you and sometimes from people you love and people you think shouldn't be criticizing you. And it goes on. So after some time, you just realize you become weary. And when you're weary, then you don't want to do anything again. You just want to sleep. You can't prepare a message. You just see your appetite is gone, your energy, your drive, the fire is gone. And sometimes it's because you've also achieved something that you set yourself to achieve. You know, if I'm able to do this, I will be happy. You do it and realize you're still 26. And you're going to live to be about 86. So you have 60 more years after you've achieved something at 26. So it is this, that's why I said every 5 to 7 years, you must challenge yourself to do something else.
This is time with Pastor Otawale, a very explosive start to the discussion about the ministry of the pastor. And the more we explore the issues, the more questions come out about the peaks and everything in between. Let's go for a brief break. When we come back, let's find out, where do you take those hits? What do you do? How do you guard your heart? Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otable as we discuss the ministry of the pastor. Pastor Eric?
Doug, offenses are inevitable in human relationship and especially the church. How can a pastor guard his heart and respond appropriately to betrayals and disappointment in ministry?
I think the pastor must expect it and must prepare for it. And the way to do that is to approach our work professionally. Most pastors enter the ministry by just working their way through. They don't go through formal seminary. And so they don't get to learn everything about the field they are entering into, how to handle the emotional aspect of their work. And so they come into ministry just from the street, so to speak. And as a result, we don't have a professional approach to much of our relationships. If somebody was trained as a clinical psychologist or a counselor, whose work is quite close, part of his work, quite close to what we do, they will be taught how to separate their emotions from their work. If you are a doctor, you would know the ethics of your work, that you don't treat somebody who you are very, very emotionally connected to, because it disturbs your own judgment. So these are some rules that some professions use. But when it comes to pastors, it's free range. Everybody just does as they feel led. And it's one of the reasons why I'm not a fan of this daddy, mommy, calling people by father, mother, children, because I think it creates a very domestic environment that doesn't help you to properly separate, if you have to separate, from what is going on. So offenses will come. You just have to get ready that people offend you. You have to forgive them in advance. You know, when Jesus prayed when he was being crucified and said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing," he knew, the people knew what they were doing. They were crucifying Jesus, and they knew they were crucifying Jesus. But Jesus had to protect his heart from the people he has to redeem, because he has to redeem these same people who are crucifying him, and he has to protect so he doesn't take it personal. And so he prays for their forgiveness. And so there is a way in which we must be able to separate ourselves from people, in the sense. I mean, when you say that people wonder, that doesn't mean that you don't care for them. You care for them so much that you give them distance.
But Doc, what are the steps that a pastor can take if the person has been hurt and the pain is there? What are the maybe some simple steps that you can take to be able to?
I think in most professions that are close to ours, you always have to go for reviews as a practitioner yourself. So if you're a clinical psychologist, you have to have somebody you go to talk to maybe every month and unburden and discuss your issues with. It's difficult to do it as a pastor. That is why pastors must have peer relationships, people who are on their level. And you don't go to report yourself necessarily, but to have conversation, to discuss what you're going through. And in the talking, as you talk about what you're going through, just talking about it is part of your hurt. If it gets very bad, then you need to talk to a senior colleague whom you think is level-headed enough to help you navigate that path. If there is nobody, then you just have to trust the Lord and read the scriptures and just follow the example of Jesus and trust him to heal your heart.
Doc, you mentioned ethics. Will it be appropriate or ethical for a pastor to share their fears, their anxieties, their frustrations with their congregation?
It depends on who is your congregation, because we have different kinds of people in our congregation. I mean, my wife is in my church, so in a sense, is in my congregation. And then there are members of my congregation who are friends. Some are my schoolmates, childhood friends, and some I've known in the church for so long that they become almost like your friend. So that's different from just a church member who you don't have much of a relationship with. So you can share with people very selectively, but don't just share with everybody, because people tend to use what you share with them against you. The vulnerability of a pastor all sometimes becomes the weapon that is used against him. So whilst you think you're creating sympathy, you are weaponizing somebody to hurt you the more, because you've put a tool in their hands. That if they don't know how to use that tool well, can cut you very painfully.
Doug, and obviously the pulpit is totally out in this conversation.
One of the disciplines I think every pastor must have is, as much as possible, never to talk about their pain and hurts in the pulpit. It may seem like a good thing, but it's not a good thing. You will empower people in a way you don't want to empower them. And they would use that empowerment against you at some point in their lives. Even if they help you, they will use it against you. It's just human nature. I don't blame people if they act that way. Human beings are like that. If you give a stick to a little child, he hit you very soon with it. So he doesn't even know he's hitting you, but he will hit you with it.
Doc, so if a person is overwhelmed, would you recommend that they step up the pulpit for their own benefit?
A sabbatical leave.
Yeah, I mean, we should be taking sabbaticals. Ask me whether I've taken sabbatical before. Because the theory and the practice don't always match together.
That's some form of break.
Yeah, I take a leave every year. I take a leave, at least I take a month leave. It's only this COVID year that I haven't taken my leave, but I take a leave every year. I've been threatening myself to take a full year sabbatical, and I haven't fulfilled the threat yet. But it's good to have some time off and rebuild and renew and refresh yourself.
So, Doc, when you take a leave, what do you do to refresh yourself as a pastor?
I don't do anything pastoral. I don't go and visit churches. I don't go and preach. I don't even talk to church members. Just get refreshed. Observe the world differently. Learn new things. And then eventually I incorporate all of that into my life and my ministry because it enriches the depth of what I do as a leader.
Thank you, sir.
It sounds very circular, relaxing. It's almost foreign to a person who has run and never taken a break. It sounds almost foreign.
Yeah, because work can be addictive. And it can also be murderous. It can kill you. So, and I'm not even talking about physical health. I'm just talking about it can choke you where you can't produce again. You're just frozen. So, I take my leave every year, and I spend time at art galleries, watching artwork, listening to orchestras. That's what I do mostly, and just visiting and acting as if I'm not a pastor, not sinning. Because normally I have my wife with me when I'm doing that, but just living my life as if I'm just an ordinary person, not a pastor. And what I like most is to go to a place where nobody knows me so that I can just walk the streets and buy from the street and just live a life that I can't live in my normal life now.
I'm just imagining there's a place in the world that somebody doesn't know Pastor Tom.
Oh, yeah, there are many places. There are many places.
Doc, so when somebody has a small church and doesn't have backup, and can't take time off, what should they do, Doc?
If they are young, they can handle it for a while. You know, I didn't used to do this when I was a young pastor. I preached constantly, you know. But as I grew older, I had to start rearranging my time and making room for my sanity and my thoughts. So if he's a young pastor, has just started, maybe he's just about in his 20s, 30s, you know, push it as much as you can. But by the time you hit your mid-30s and 40s, you have to start. And I started this sometime in my mid-30s. And especially when our children were younger, every year we go somewhere in this country, in their first years, and then I'm able to go now to other countries.
Sometimes the pressures pastors go through affects their families. What should a pastor do when the demands and pressures of ministry so much they are not able to fulfill fully their marital or parental responsibilities?
It's a matter of first setting your priorities. That God himself says that he wants you to manage your home well. He's going to use that to mark how you manage his flock. So then managing your home is a major priority. And I've said it before, you know, I spend a lot of time with my wife. We spend time together. We talk together. We sit together. I like her to be wherever I am and see what I see, so that there is not much gap between my exposure and her exposure. So we do that. And we try to involve our children. And when our children were young, we spent a lot of time together at home playing. It's a space you must own. This is me. If I had not been called by God to do this work, this is me. This is how my life is. And live that life. And also live your life in the pulpit. And try to create this protection for your family so that they don't become victims of church battles.
It must be an intentional effort.
It must be deliberate. Yeah. It must be deliberate.
Doug, if a pastor is listening to us and has lost the drive and the passion after years of fruitless ministry results, what should the person do?
General advice sometimes doesn't work this way because you need to talk to the person to ascertain what the issues are. Sometimes it's a matter of structure. There are people who are working on their own who shouldn't work on their own. They don't have the capacity to drive an independent work. It takes a lot of energy to do that. So if that is the problem, you know, it's going to be difficult for the person to do it, especially if they are a bit older now. If the person is working some in an organization but is still struggling, then I'm going to look at their skill sets. What did they come into ministry with? I'm going to look at their preaching. I'm going to look at their messaging. I'm going to look at how well they've developed. I'm going to look at their discipline, how much time they give to preparing for what they do, things like that. I'm going to look at their human relations and team building skills. How are they able to get people to work with them in the church? So there are so many things that have to be looked at to help the person to make adjustments and hopefully transition into a better performance.
Since you mentioned preaching, I wanted to find out, what's the recommended time should a pastor preach in a service, and what will make his sermon impactful?
The shorter, the better. You know, you can't go wrong with short messages, because if it's boring, people will tolerate you for just a short time. So if you don't preach well and you preach for 25 minutes, everybody's like, okay, he finishes early. You know, so they will tolerate you. They know pastor starts, it's not going to be fun. But, you know, I'll sit here for 25 minutes and I'll be fine. And they will come again and tolerate your 25 minutes. But if you don't preach well and you preach for 1 hour, 30 minutes, then people are going to leave the church because now you are torturing them. So my first rule is, when you're starting to preach, preach measurable messages, short. So probably about 30 minutes. And maybe when you become very good, you can do 45 minutes. And you know, there are people who can preach for 2 hours and still sustain an audience. But that's a very unique ability. Not everybody can do that. So if your mentor preaches for 2 hours and you are a 25-minute capacity preacher and you want to do 2 hours, people are going to leave your church. They'll vote with their feet. They can't handle the torture.
So what are the ingredients for an impactful sermon?
We will probably have to look at sermon preparation and all of that. But basically, when I'm preaching a message, I try to put myself in the position of the people. So I'm thinking of myself. If I'm so and so, if I'm a single mother in the church and I'm going through this, what kind of message would I want to be preached to me? So I try to imagine myself as people. Or I'm a taxi driver. I don't have much education. I've gone to church. I want to be somebody. How does a pastor help me to be that? So that's my first level, trying to identify your audience and connecting with them, empathizing with them. You see, there is something that is called the marriage between the pastor and his flock. Every pastor, almost like a marriage, when you start pastoring and you have a flock, you're almost like, it's like a courtship. But over time, you get to know them. You get to really know your flock very intimately. You can know how they think. You can know their fears. You can know their anxieties, because they also talk to you about their problems. And you get to understand what they are dealing with. And it gives you then the opportunity to look into the Word of God and look for a message that can address some of the things that people bring to you as problems. So if you do that, then you can. But, I mean, there are other issues about how to prepare a sermon that we can look at.
This is Time with Pastor Otabulo. At the point, it was pastoral science, pastoral engineering, pastoral diagnostics. And obviously, we are learning in a way we couldn't have done anywhere else but on Time with Pastor Otabulo. We'll take another break. When we come back, let's ask even more about the toolkit of the pastor. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Time with Pastor Otabulo, looking at the ministry of the pastor. Pastor Priscilla?
Doc, so could you share with us some personal insights on teaching and preaching, how you have effectively preached to the same congregation almost week after week, almost 40 years? How do you do it?
It takes a lot of work. You have to be mindful of yourself, mindful of your people, and mindful of what they are going through and what they are dealing with. You have to be mindful of the larger environment. And you have to also sharpen your communication skills. The older I have gotten, the sharper I have become at doing what I do. First, because I have a lot of experience behind me. But second, because I study more now than when I was younger. In other words, I spend more time now preparing a sermon than when I was younger. So I'm more invested in what I'm doing. I think all of that helps. So how have I done it for 40 years? I don't know. I just go through doing the same thing over and over again, and hopefully it turns out well. And people think it's good, and then I go the next week, you know. So maybe if I'm talking broadly about how to do all of that, I can then sequence some things. But just dealing with it from my personal point of view, I just do what I have to do. I just do what I have to do. I get up, I study. I'm constantly studying, constantly reading, constantly typing. That's my job.
You listen to yourself afterwards? Watch, playback?
I don't usually like listening to myself, because I get very disturbed when I listen to myself. I feel, I get very disturbed, because I can pinpoint all the mistakes I'm making. So I'm not a fan of myself.
Well, sorry, is there hope for us?
Because listening to you is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Doc, what are the three daily routines a pastor should do to have longevity ministry?
I think a pastor should spend time with God. And I don't like to say should be praying. I say spend time with God. And I choose those words very carefully, because I have seen people develop a pattern of prayer that doesn't spend time with God. It is just an a declaration. You know, they just go stand somewhere and speak in tongues for a very long time. And there's no real intimacy with God. There's no consciousness of God. There's no consciousness of the Holy Spirit. They're not practicing the presence of God. They're not hearing him speak to them. They're not having any exchange with them. So instead of just saying prayer, which I think gets abused, I say spend time with God. And it's a discipline I learned years ago, and I've been practicing all my life in ministry. I mean, if you're a pastor, the Bible is your book. You have to know that book. Not just read it, but study it. And so I spend real time studying. And I use different tools, but I really go into studying, reading widely about a passage, history, culture, word, and all of that. The third one, I don't know, just be happy.
So, Doc, just a point of interest.
Yeah.
What basic learning tool would you recommend?
These days, it's so many things free online. And there are all kinds of Bible study tools that you don't need to spend money to purchase. So I'd say that the first thing is get a good Bible study tool online. When I started this probably about 25 years ago, I shifted from books to digital. So that's when I started really using my digital books. So I started with something called a PC Study Bible, which has tons and tons. And then I went to a program called Libronics, and Libronics later became a Logos Bible software. And so I used the Logos Bible software, and I have all my materials there, and I use it very effectively. I've taken courses on how to use it, so I know how to use that to do my study.
Doc, the more I listen to you, the more I get the impression almost as if there is a science to ministry or pastoral work, certain skills one must deliberately acquire. As it gets more and more complex, what should the pastor do when they realize their acts is dull? What kind of skills must they have? Because you mentioned quite an array.
Yeah, I mean, a pastor is a communicator. He's a learner and a communicator. You communicate what you've learned. So your communication skills are very, very important. Your language skills, your word use. And people may not value these things, but you see, you should be able to use one word to express an idea that is so clear that you don't have to use 20 words to express it. And that all of that helps to shorten your preaching time. So you can, in 5 minutes, say what somebody would take an hour to say. But because you've developed the skills to use the right words to say the right things and paint the right word pictures, you can deliver in a short time. And that's a skill that needs to be developed. It doesn't just come by grace. It has to be worked on. And even study, how to properly study the Bible. Those are skills that you have to develop. So there are quite a lot of skills that pastors must have. I think for a lot of pastors in our part of the world, because they come in from directly a secular world, maybe you serve in a church, you do well, and then you're made a pastor. So we don't have the formal training for most of the things we're doing. So after some time, you just feel stuck, and everything now becomes too hard for you to do.
And for most people, they dwell on the most visible part of the work, which is the preaching, and don't see what happens outside.
Yes, I mean, a lot happens, especially if you're a senior pastor. Even if you're not a senior pastor and you have a responsibility, whether you're a youth pastor, a music pastor, a worship leader, and you're a pastor. I mean, these are specialized ministries that you need to really be very competent in. If you're a children's church pastor, you have to be on top of it. You have to understand how to do children's ministry, study new trends, new global trends, and all of that to really do it effectively.
The pastor himself or herself must be well informed then. You may have leaders or other pastors handling children's ministry and so on, but you must be on top.
Yes.
you know. But I'm wondering about the semi-educated pastor who has a growing number of educated middle class. How is he to connect and to cope?
Well, one thing I can say is when you commit to learning, education will not be a problem. Lack of it will not be a problem. Because learning can be done in any language, you know. So you have to be committed to learning. And one of the ways to be committed to learning is to be committed to inquiry. Ask questions from people. Don't look at problems and take the first answer that pops into your head. Challenge your thoughts. Challenge the things that come into your head and put them into different scenarios and see whether they work in all those scenarios. And when you do that, you develop critical thinking. So when you look at a problem, you look at it from angles that people haven't considered, but you've considered because you challenge your thoughts. You don't just settle for the easiest thought that drops into your head.
Sorry.
Doug, what are the no-go ethical areas for a pastor? Can a pastor borrow money from the congregation?
I will go back to how I answered it. If the congregation member is your wife, I suppose you can borrow money from your wife. It's a mutual thing. But I suppose you're thinking generally of your church members. I would say don't, under no circumstance, ever do that. It's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt you. It undermines your leadership. And it gives people the opportunity to talk to you in ways you don't want them to talk to you in. So there are certain things that you better just keep your hunger to yourself than tell everybody about it. And also become a slave, because the borrower is a slave to the lender. Become a slave to people you're supposed to be leading in that sense. I think it's going to hurt your reputation.
But what other no-go ethical areas can we talk about?
Sexual morality is one of those areas that you have to have strict rules to work with. But you also have to guard your own ambitions well, so that in desiring and aspiring to do something, you don't become arrogant and think of yourself more highly than you ought to. So when Paul tells us to think soberly, learning to think of yourself soberly is something that every pastor should develop. And it's important. So these are issues, because pride will go before a fall. And pride doesn't mean that you are not ambitious. You're ambitious. You want to do great things, but don't put yourself in God's place, you know, and don't become a god to people, and don't allow people to make you a god.
So, Doc, we've been looking at it, this discussion from the pastor's perspective. But let's imagine I'm a congregant of a church, and it seems that the church is stale and stagnant, and I can see that my pastor is burnt out and disillusioned. What can I do to help as a member of that congregation?
I think first you pray for your pastor. Make him a part of your prayer. So if you have a daily prayer routine of a sort, then pray for him or her. And once in a while, try to say words of encouragement to your pastor. Don't flatter him, because people see through flattery very easily. But say words of encouragement. If he preaches, say something positive about his preaching, especially if it's good. But you can also bring up the conversation and say that, you know, I've been in this church for 3 years. 3 years ago when I came, you know, you seem to be very vibrant. You were doing this, ABC. These days, I don't see you doing that. Is there anything going on? And ask it in a non-condemnatory way. So that's one way to do that. You could also talk to another pastor and try to build a relationship between your pastor and that person whom you think can be of help to your pastor. So there are probably several things you can do, but definitely don't go talking about it and don't go gossiping about it and don't go challenging him to it, that he's lost his fire, he's lost his zeal. You know, I mean, pastors are human beings too. If you start dealing with them that way, you wound them, you break them. They already know they are not doing too well. Don't hurt them more. Pray for them and try to be encouraging.
Doc, will it be wrong for church leadership in like a council to call the pastor and tell him that, look, we see that you are tired, but we want you to go off for a while at the expense of the church?
Yeah, especially if they are bearing the expense. I think that's why pastors have councils and boards and groups around them. And these are the things that a church council can do to say, you know, we want to give you a week off. And this is the package we've thought of. Just all we want you to attend this conference. We think it will help you. And this is the package we've thought through and help the pastor to retool and rebuild himself.
It's been an amazing discussion about a subject I believe will be a blessing to so many people. Thank you so much, Doc, for throwing light on this all-important subject.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Eric.
Thank you very much.
I guess it's a learning platform for us.
Instructive. Thank you for the opportunity.
Doc, as we sign out, Jeremiah 8:20 says, the harvest is past, the summer is ending, and we are not saved. If somebody is listening today and saying, wow, is it too late? Am I not too old? What would you say to them as we close? What would be your prayer for our viewers?
I mean, I don't know why anybody would think he's too old. You know, the fact that you feel a need to change means God has planted a seed of change in you. And if God thought you were too old to change, he would not have planted that thought into you. So you have to trust the Holy Spirit who is leading you and inspiring you to want to be better. So for anybody who thinks they're too old, Moses started at 80. And he did another 40 years of ministry. Abraham had Isaac close to 100. So God has a record and reputation of using people who are considered old and doing amazing things with them. So there is still hope. Just be on that journey. Get help. Ask for help. Look for help. Look for people who can help you. And if you are a young pastor up and coming, and you are bent out in your 20s, then get help very, very quickly before it stays as a feature of your life, because something can happen to you in your 20s and you live with it to the rest of your life because it becomes you, it becomes your habit. So when you see these things creeping in, try to deal with them very, very quickly. But I trust God that every pastor will be blessed. And I'm very confident that your ministry will be fruitful. And I pray that God will help us to help you and to put in your hands tools that will enable you to do your work very effectively. May the Lord bless you, enrich you, keep you, expand you, and cause you to grow without any borders and limitations. In Jesus' name, amen.